Joshua Tobin welcomes everyone. Welcome this evening. My name is Joshua Marchuk. I'm the National Director of Alumni Connections and Advisor Engagement for NCSY. Rav Huttner, one of the founding Rosh Yeshivas in the development of NCSY, made the following statement. It says, Torah is not built, it's planted. This time of year, for those with a green thumb out there, they know that this is the time that we place tulip bulbs into the ground. They know that they prepare their lawns for the spring. That even though everything is starting to fall off the trees, even though things in the days are getting darker, that this is the time to prepare for the future. It's the time that Hanukkah comes in, and we know that a lot of darkness is destroyed by a little bit of light, the light of the menorah, the light of the Torah. The end of this week's parasha, we see that the last engagement between Yitzhak and Yaakov, that Yaakov is called over by Yitzhak. V'yikra Yitzhak el Yaakov, that Yaakov calls over Yitzhak, Yitzhak calls over Yaakov, v'yivarech l'Esav, and he goes ahead and he blesses him, he gives him the bracha. V'yitzaveyo v'yom eloi, and then he commands him, l'tikach isha b'benos kanan. Don't take a wife from b'benos kanan. So something that we're fighting even to today, of taking from outside spouses in the Chai Yisrael. But what's more important that I wanted to point out here is the chinuch lesson that we learn from the modeling of Yitzhak to Yaakov. That we see the yesod of what chinuch is. That first Yitzhak went and he approached Yaakov in such a way that he took care of his needs first. He gave him his bracha. He gave him what he needed, his love, his chizuk. And then he went and gave it Tzibor. And then he went ahead and gave him the command of how to relive your life. This is something that many of us that are in this room experienced and still do experience in NCSY. For the past 62 years, NCSY has been going out and giving chizuk to Klal Yisrael, to teens from all throughout North America. Giving them love, giving them a slice of pizza, a game of bowling, and then inspiring them in a direction to live their life. This is the orchard that Rav Huttner was speaking of. NCSY's impact is seen in every Jewish community in North America. NCSY's impact is seen not only in the generation that we might have attended NCSY, but as we go through the Bati Midrashim, the seminaries, all across the world, Jewish communities, we see the next generation and the next generation. Just a few weeks ago, I actually shared this with Rabbi Alofsky already, that my son called me and he said, you know this guy, Spar? Yeah, why? He said, from Minneapolis? I said, yeah, why? He goes, oh, we just became friends in the mirror. And by the way, I think we're going to the Orlovskys for Shabbos in a few weeks. They're coming to you for Shabbos.
I had no idea. Thank you. There you go.
Today, NCSY and our community, many of us know the impact that Michlelet and Kolel have done for the Yeshiva Day School population, JUMP has done for the Yeshiva Day School population. But just to go ahead and highlight what we're doing for the community that we might not be as familiar with, let me tell you about the Ann Sampson Jerusalem journey just for a moment. We have children, teens from throughout North America, public school kids who have never seen the inside of an Orthodox shul, coming and spending 4 or 5 weeks in Eretz Yisrael with collegiate advisors that are inspiring them, helping them from a day-in and day-out point of view, connecting with them and building them, loving them and experiencing Eretz Yisrael, and inspiring to come back and make changes in their life. They want to go ahead and take it to the next step. They'll come back, and in a few weeks from now, I invite any of you to come to Stamford, Connecticut during the public school winter vacation week. Rabbi Barry Nathan, the former regional director of Long Island NCSY, used to run. Yeah, that's great. Go ahead. Used to run National Yachid Kala a couple of decades ago. Today, Rabbi David Beshefkin, who grew up in this shul, is the one running that. Yeah, but we can talk about that also. 300 public school kids are going to spend their winter vacation sitting with Marbet Torah from Eretz Yisrael and from America, sitting with advisors and growing and learning Yom HaBalayla during their winter vacation. Locally, our NCSY region here is run by Rabbi Yeshua Kol, And today, last year, running 19 public school programs in New York area, seeing 1,000 unique teens week after week, inspiring them in their public schools. This year, expanding to 22 public schools in Mitzvah Shem. We're putting a full-time person in Westchester to connect with kids who are Jewish, but they do not know anything about Yiddishkeit. That's what's going on today. I'm proud to say that my department, Alumni Connections, we together work. Rabbi Alicia Finman's in the room. Where are you, Rabbi Finman? He was in the room. Rabbi Finman, who works on my team throughout, one of the members of my team. Rabbi Finman and myself and a team across the country work with 12th graders as they go into college and Eretz Yisrael. We connect them to the program so that when NCSY ends at the end of 12th grade, their experience in Jewish in Judaism does not end there. They connect with people like Rabbi Reuven Boschnick on Brooklyn College campus with OUJLIC and the like. He's over there.
Okay.
And programs all throughout. But what our goal is to get each one of them to go to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah and to change their life. Tonight's raffle was about that. It's about trying to support the scholarships for those kids and to make a difference. I also want to mention, before I go to introduce Rabbi Olavsky, that we also have the schuss of having Rabbi Yossi Lieber, also the former regional director of Long Island NCSY, here tonight. Thank you very much, Rabbi Lieber. I'd be remiss not to mention that we should all be mispal for Mr. Perry Fish, that he should continue to have a refu shalima, Mitzvah Shem, also former regional director of Long Island NCSY. What can I say about Rabbi Olavsky?
I know what you could say. I'm going to wait.
You've been waiting for this, huh?
I've been waiting for this.
Safia, cue the music. During the 1980s, Rabbi Olavsky inspired Jewish teens throughout Long Island. I could talk about the fact that I myself was one of them. But first I want to talk about the fact that everyone in the world now knows that Rabbi Olavsky is an amazing Marbitz Torah. He's a Talmud Chacham that goes ahead.
I'll let you know when I disagree. Go ahead.
He's also very good at being a bobblehead. He has a very unique flair of giving over Torah, as we all know. And that's why you're here this evening. I can tell you about the stories that he used to share with us about candles, about kings, princes, poisonous gas. I could talk about those. I could talk about the Divrei Torah he shared with us. I could talk about the songs that he sang and the songs that he wrote.
I'm not saying nothing.
Okay. But what I will tell you is just one other story, because that's all the big fanfare that everyone knows about. I'll tell you that Rabbi Olavsky is also one that will walk into a room and see an 11th grader cramming for a geometry test, put everything aside, and sit down and study with him. I aced that exam, by the way. And that's the story that people don't know about Rabbi Olavsky. They know about him in the big stage, but not to forget the individual trees in that orchard. I have to tell you, it's a tremendous chus for myself to call upon Rabbi Olavsky to speak with us this evening, my regional director and our regional director, please.
Thank you very much, Jack. We both know you could have done a lot worse. Rabbi Kol, Rabbi Lieber, Rabbi Nathan, Rabbi Kalowitz. Thank God Dr. Bright's here. Break up all the rabbis. Rabbi Abramowitz. It is such a pleasure and a privilege for me to return to the scene of my second... Oh, I never turned this on. Thank you so much, Rabbi Marjak, Rabbi Lieber. The trick is making it look like you're making it up on the spot. But anyway, it's so exciting for me to return to the scene of my second regional convention site here in Shari Tefillah, which was one of the most exciting experiences for me. We had several hundred kids, and it was so poorly run that it's amazing that we survived as an organization. You know? I forgot to order the pizza. There's only one pizza place in Sabra's Pizza, Ovo Shalom. And I called them up on Friday, and I said, I need 30 pies. They said, we don't take orders on Friday, only in store. So the whole convention walked down the street, and everybody walked in, and I said, two slices and a Coke, two slices and a Coke, two slices and a Coke. So it was interesting. But and then Joe Werfel, who was my assistant director and now is famous on YouTube for his dramatic presentation, he the person who was supposed to get the food forgot to bring the food for the entire convention. And this was Memorial Day weekend. So if you know Joe, he's about 6'8", you know, and he sits down on the stoop, puts his heads in his hands, and says, that's it, we're finished, we have no food. I said, Joe, you have to go to Meal Mart in Queens and get the food. He goes, it's Memorial Day weekend, it's the Van Gogh Express, I'll never make it back. I said, Joe, you got to do it, you got to go. And off he goes, you know. In the meantime, Shari Tefila had another building that was left unlocked through somebody's negligence. And so I ran down there and said, somebody come. So there was nobody here, because Joe was somewhere in the Van Wyck, and I was in this abandoned building, and there was nobody around. And when I came back, the youth director was trying to do the housing, but he didn't have the housing list. And I came back, and I was, you know, more of I had more stature than I have today, those who will recall. And he lifted me up in the air, which is not an easy accomplishment, you know? And he says to me, where's the housing list? And I said, Joe has it. But it all worked out. Baruch Hashem. There's a certain malach that watches over NCSY to make sure that, you know, in spite of our best efforts, we're successful, you know? And Baruch Hashem, the Paris that NCSY enjoyed, not only during my tenure, you know, but during the regional directors who came before me and after me, is the stuff of legend. It's absolutely amazing. And we grow up. Well, some of us grew up, not all of us. I'm thinking of particular people in the room right now as I'm speaking. But we didn't all grow up. Some of us maintain that childlike innocence, which other people will refer to as immaturity. And, you know, we're still out there. We're still out there doing so many of the things that we did. And the accomplishments continue, and the payrolls continue, and children and grandchildren, and you see, you know, all the effect that people gave, and it was, any of the regional directors will tell you, it's no one person. I remember when I came here to Long Island, I was in Los Angeles. I want to take a moment just to talk about myself, something I hardly get an opportunity to do. I was once speaking at an Amen conference, me and Pesach Kron. Pesach Kron spoke for 45 minutes. I got up, made a bracha, everyone answered Amen. I said, I'm done. Thank you. In any event, so reminds me of another story, but I can't tell now. We'll just go from thing to thing. But anyway, what story was I about to tell?
Los Angeles.
I started in Los Angeles. And I had a chapter of six kids. I built it up to 60, you know, through many of the methods I later used in Long Island, which was telling kids different stuff about, you know, things and promising things I couldn't possibly deliver. And it was very successful. And we really built quite a chapter. So I was a hot property in NCSY at that point. And they offered me, I remember this is 1978, so money meant different things back then. They offered me to be youth director of a shul in Los Angeles, $25,000. They offered me to be in San Francisco, $25,000. They offered me to coordinate all of the Jewish youth groups in San Diego for $25,000. Yeshiva University of LA offered to make me a dean. Dean. My parents, I don't know how they survived this, but I turned that one down. A dean of American University, you know, and that was for $20,000, and, you know, and I turned that down to become Long Island director for 10, because as my parents say, that I always wait for opportunity to knock, and then I refuse to open the door. But they thought it was really pretty good, because they only had one member, so, you know, $10,000 to take care of one kid, how big, you know, I really think that's, you're probably the highest paid guy in the business, you know what I mean? So I came in, now, you know, just the history, you know, Yossi Levy's here. Yossi Levy started the region. He was director for 1 year. Thank you very much. And then Teddy Gross did it for 1 year. And then Perry and Debbie Fish, should have a foolish Schlema, they did it for the next 2 years. And then the next 2 years, they went through 5 directors in 2 years. One guy lasted 4 months, another guy lasted, one person quit before he was even hired. It was like, it was a mess. So the time I came on, you know, we had no credibility. So I walked into a community and I said, hi, I'm NCSY, we're gonna make programs. And like, we heard this already 5 times, you know, I mean, nobody trusts you, go away, you know. And I went from community to community and everybody explained to me how it could not be successful. And they were right. I mean, there was nothing I could do. I couldn't argue with them. Yeah, it doesn't matter. These are great stories. There are people who came for a shir. This is, they're not NCSY people. I understand. These are great stories. I tell these stories to real people, okay? What do you think? I do this all the time. I get paid enormous amounts of money to tell the same stupid stories I told Nancy as well. Nothing has changed.
Subtle.
Subtle. Is that subtle? Oh, before I forget, Ray Marchuk wants you to buy raffle tickets. He asked me to try to work that in, so I'm going to forget. So please go and buy raffle tickets, all right? Because I don't want to hear about it afterwards. Anyway. So I went around to each different place, and they all explained to me how it couldn't be done. And they were all right. At the end of the first year, we had 100 paid members. The second year, 300 paid members. The third year, 500 paid members. And people said to me, how did you do it? I said, I couldn't do it. I knew it couldn't be done. Everyone convinced me it couldn't be done. I didn't tell the kids. And so the kids went out and built an organization that they didn't know what they were doing was impossible. And I brought together a group of people, all of whom had similar visions, and they were able to build things. Because there's a general rule. There are always people in life who are going to tell you it can't be done. And people are always arguing limitations. Yeah? And if you allow those limitations to become your life, then that's it. Then you'll never accomplish anything. You know? I'll tell you one more story. Even though people came for you. Yeah, I mean, Belitsky, the rabbi of Young Illinois Park, I came to him, and I explained to him what I wanted to do, and he says to me, Bacher, you know you're out of your mind. I said, yes, Rabbi, I do. He said, good, because nothing in this world has been accomplished by a sane person. And I told this story over once, and somebody who knew the story firsthand said that when the Punisher Rav came to Israel, and he went out to Bnei Brak, which was a desert. And he starts pointing. He says, here we're going to build the yeshiva. Here we're going to build the Beis Yaakov. Here we're going to, you know. Rabbi Yecheskel Sarna arranged for a psychologist to come and visit him because they thought he lost his mind during the war. Because it can't be done. It can't be done. Life is filled with impossibilities. And I have to tell you that anybody who is a firm Jew today, you have to understand that this is a nes. It's an unbelievable thing. You don't know how valuable this is. This is the fact that we're sitting in a room today. I started in Yeshiva Day School in 1964, which according to my revised biography is 10 years before I was born. So I figure if Superman can have a reboot, so can I. But when I went in, everybody knew that Torah Judaism was dead. It was a given that it was dead, you know? And to be able to turn around where we are today, it's marsh nisiv and it flows. Everyone knew it was over. Anyone who had any brains knew it was over. And there were a handful of people who came to America who had visions, who had dreams. So hard today to dream. So hard to dream. I do a trip Thanksgiving weekend to Europe. This year we're going to Spain. I went to Prague, went to Greece. They called me up the first time. I said, why do you want me to come? I'm not Pesach prone. I'm not going to do any research, you know. I'm not going to rewind. I don't know any history, you know. I said, I'm just going to say the same stuff I always say. I don't prepare anything new, even if it's a shir and it's not for MC's wife. This is all I do, Marchuk. That's it. I haven't changed my routine in 35 years. Anyway, so I said, so what do you want me? They said, because they'll see your picture and they know they're going to have a good time. I said, oh, that I can do. Yeah. So we stay in a nice hotel and we have plenty of time for shopping, and he flies in a caterer from Eric Stroud. This is my idea of roughing it. And one of the things I do is a question and answer. And there was one trip where all the questions were the same thing. Why is the chinuch system failing our children? Why are kids turning out to be uninspired? Why are people turning around and they're not excited? Why is it missing? And there's a lot of answers to this question, because it's one of the biggest questions that we have to deal with today. There's a lot of answers to this question. And I thought to myself at that point what I thought was the nekudah. When I started in 1964 in the Hebrew Academy of Nassau County, I did not come from a Shomer Shabbos family. When I walked into that door, I was a first grader, and I got a message, overtly and covertly, and that is that you're a hero. You are saving Klal Yisrael. You are saving Torah Judaism. If you were bad, they couldn't throw you out. There wasn't enough of us. They couldn't afford to throw you out. There was a kid, I told this story over, I was in Merrick for Shabbos, I told this story over. There was a kid who was had a reputation of trouble. So Rabbi Gottesman, the assistant principal, is using the facilities, and this kid is outside trying to sell a screwdriver to another kid. You see it coming already. So the other kid says, how do I know it's a good screwdriver? He says, yeah, I'll take off the door to the store. And he starts unscrewing the door. And the other kid says, wait, there might be somebody in it. He says, I'll check. And he goes, oh, hi, Rabbi Gottesman. You think they threw that kid out? Of course not. If you did something bad, you know, Rabbi Fidel called you into his office, and he sighed, and he said, I know your family, they're such nice people, so you have to do better. That was the message. We were good people. We were heroes. Today, every kid gets the same message, overtly and covertly. We don't need you here. You step out of line, you're out. And everybody walks around scared. I don't care which community you come from or what walk of life. We have become too successful. You understand? It's a scary thing. But you hear people say it. There are too many from Jews. I can't find an apartment. There's not a spot in school. I can't find parking. Now we can afford to throw people out. Baruch Hashem, now we're successful. You know, we don't need you. And when somebody hears the message that we don't need you, that I'm not essential, I'm not a hero, that's the beginning of the end. So I was just in Merrick, and they were asking me, you know, how do you start an NCSY? You know, what's the secret to it, you know? I said, there's two things that motivate people, COVID and money, and we don't have any money. Now, if people buy raffle tickets, then maybe we can pay tuition for a few kids to go to Eretz Yisrael and learn Torah. Unless you have other things to do with your money. I mean, it is Motzei Shabbos. I'm sure the ice cream store is open. No reason a kid has to go to yeshiva. And I could buy pizza and ice cream for myself. Anyway, subtle marchak. Am I subtle on that one? I really tried. I know people came for a cheer, but I tried to sell raffle tickets. Anyway, so when I said this took money and cover, I said you make somebody feel chashuv. You give them a position. You give them an award. You give them something. You know, when a person understands that what they're doing is worth honor, and cover is a tremendous thing. And doesn't every one of us need that in our lives to feel that we're conscious? So I'm describing something that's taking place in our schools. They were asking about the schools. But there's a problem. There's a problem in Klal Yisrael. Now, I had somebody, somebody was asking about this once, and I was talking, and this guy says, Orlovsky, you're just negative, you're hacking, you're always hacking, you know, everything is fine, and everything's great, and everybody's happy, and everything's terrific. Baruch Hashem. It's just me. I'm the only one. So I said, I hear what you're saying. But from Project Yes, Yaki Horowitz. He wrote an article once where he said something that I thought was absolutely brilliant. He said, when people ask me how Klal Yisrael is doing, I said, it depends who you're talking to. I said, it's like a chasana. If you're in the middle circle with the chasana, it's gewaldic. Everybody's dancing and singing, they're into it. You reach the next circle, where everyone's trying to get into the first circle. That's also very good. You move to the third circle, and he says, that's the one that I'm usually in, you know. You're schlepping along, you know. And I've been in that circle for a long time now, you know, where you just, you know, hopefully it's crowded enough that you don't actually have to dance. You just undulate, you know, back and forth. These are the ones with the earplugs, you know. We're just like sort of going around, you know, trying to see how little movement we can actually expend, you know. Then there's the people standing on the outside of the circle trying to decide if they even want to undulate, you know. Then there's all the people sitting at the tables. And then there's the people outside smoking and talking on their cell phones. So he says, so it depends which circle you're looking at. And I added, and as you move out, each circle becomes larger because it's concentric circles. Each one becomes larger. Is there a circle where everything's great and everything's terrific? Of course there is. Sure there are. But there are so many people who are not experiencing that excitement, that thrill of what it means to be a Torah Jew. So I'll tell you a story that I got into trouble for. Like that narrows it down. But one of the stories. I've been telling this story for many, many years. I was doing a question and answer for Rabbonim, how to answer basic questions in Judaism. And so somebody would invariably ask, what's the one question that you can't answer? So I said, the hardest question for me to answer is when I have non-from people who say to me, I hear what you're saying. Torah, mitzvahs, it sounds so beautiful, it's so wonderful. He says, I have one question. How come when I go to from neighborhoods, people look so miserable? And I ask this question to the audience, and they always give me answers. Why? Now, one time I did this, and somebody ratted on me to my Rebbe, Rebbe Orlowick. There's a lot of people who say my Rebbe, Rebbe Orlowick, and they don't really mean it, but Rebbe Orlowick was my Bekiyas Rebbe in Hank, when I came out of Hank and I went to Chavetz Chaim. You know, he was my Bekiyas Rebbe in Chavetz Chaim in 1975, so he was really my Rebbe, yeah. And he calls me up and he says, David, you can't say that. And I said, what? He said, you can't say people aren't happy. You could say they don't look happy, but you can't say that they're not happy. Maybe they're very happy and they just look miserable. I said, Rebbe, you're right, but I've been doing this for over 20 years and no one ever said that to me. Whenever I said, why do from people look so miserable? They tell me why. They say, because we have so many kids and they're so busy, you know, and everything is so expensive. You know, and we got to do this and we got to do that. And we have so many pressures and so many things to do. They explain to me why they look so miserable. Is there a Chumash Bereishis here? Wow. I feel like I'm playing Let's Make a Deal. That's too bad because I don't really know where it is, but okay. I was hoping somebody would say no, and then I'd say, all right, I'll just paraphrase. Anyway. Hey, this is misleading. This is all five. I only wanted a voracious. Anyway. It's an unbelievable idea. It's a famous chazal, and everybody knows it. V'yova Yosef as Yaakov Avi, Yeredel of Neparav, Yivarech Yaakov as Paro. I'm in Bereishis Perek Mem Zayin, Pasuk Ches. Not because I think anyone's actually taking notes. It's just that my good friend Pesach Kron said to me, you know, I listen to your tapes, and you never give any Mayim HaKomos, and I got to kill myself to go and look it up. Why can't you give the Mayim HaKomos? So since then, in deference to my friend Rabbi Krohn, I always give the Mayim HaKomos. He also told me it's very important not to name drop because it's a really tacky thing to do. He said he heard this from his friend Rabbi Fran. Anyway. Is that a share? Does that count? Also, Rabbi Krohn said buy lottery tickets. Okay? Anyway. V'yomer Paro Yaakov, kami mei shnei chayecha. And Paro says to Yaakov, how old are you? That's so rude. Isn't that a rude thing to say? V'yom ha'yakev ha'paro yimei shnei megurai shloshim ha'ashana ma'advaram ha'yu yimei shnei chayei v'lo hisigu az yimei shnei chayei v'osai b'yimei megureihem. I'm only 130. In my family, that's not so old. My father lived to 180. My grandfather to 175. I've just had a very... My life has been short and hard. I've had a lot of problems, and that's why I look prematurely old. That's the conversation. So, where did it come from? What's going on? Yaakov Avinu comes down to Mitzrayim, and the famine stops. And Nisim, the Nile, comes up to greet Pyro and all kinds of wonderful things in the schus of this elder statesman of the Jewish people. And so he can't wait to meet him, and the guy walks in, and Imamish looks like he's on death's door. So Pyro, although it's a little impolite, says, "How old are you?" And he says, "I'm 130. I've had a long and hard life." And HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, says the Medrash, "You had such a hard life. You know, didn't I save you from your brother Esav who was trying to kill you? Didn't I save you from your uncle Lavan who was trying to kill you? Didn't I bring you back Yosef when he was missing and kidnapped and you thought he was dead for 17 years? Didn't I bring you back Shimon when he was thrown in prison? Didn't I bring you back Dina after she was kidnapped and raped?" You know, people might argue that those are kind of hard things, you know. You know, granted, I got my kid back here for 17 years, but, you know, my kid was missing for 17 years. My daughter was raped, you know. My uncle did try to kill me. My brother came with an army. I mean, yeah, you see, that could take a toll on a person, you know what I mean? And the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, "Kvetch, kvetch, kvetch, kvetch." You had such a hard life. I'll do you a favor. I'll shorten it. And I'll take off 1 year for every word that you said. And so, 33 words, I'll take off 33 years. You'll die at 147 instead of 180 like your father. As from Chaim Shmulevitz, if you count, the only way you get to 33 words is if you include the following words. Vayomer paro, vayomer... You have to add in those eight words. Pyro said to him, "How old are you? What do you want from Yaakov for that?" He says, "Well, Chaim Shmulevitz, because if you're a firm Jew and somebody looks at you and says, 'Why do you look so miserable?' that's a condemnation." I've had this more than once during my years in Kiev, where somebody says to me, "You know, Rabbi, you're probably the biggest challenge to my secular lifestyle." I said, "Really, what shir did I say that moved you?" He says, "No, I don't listen when you talk." I said, "Then what is it?" He says, "I know you're living this restrictive religious lifestyle, and I am living a secular lifestyle. I can do whatever I want, and I do. And I feel like you're having more fun in life than I am." And I said, "Kills you, doesn't it?" I said, "That's right, loser. Torah Jews have the party, you understand? You guys are nothing, you know?" And you can't say that. You have to mean it. A person has to feel that being a Torah Jew is the greatest thing in the world. There's a game from people play sometimes. You may have experienced it. What do you do if a Kodesh Baruch Hu comes to you and says you have 1 day off? 1 day off. It won't be in the video they show at the end of your life. There won't be any Timtum Halev. Nobody will ever know about it. It'll be completely off the record. You can have 1 day, do whatever you want. If the answer is not, "I would do just what I'm doing now," then there's something wrong with your yadus. I'm fantasizing about something else? Why wouldn't I want what I want? Yeah? I married 33 years. My wife thanked me for 31 of the best years of her life. I said, "We're married 33. She says, "The first two, you know." But let's say my wife said to me, "You know, I know it's hard being married, so many obligations. Tomorrow you're off. You don't have to talk to me. You don't have to pretend that you're married to me, you know." I would be so hurt. If you love somebody and you care about somebody, why would you want to lose out on that? If you loved the Kodesh Baruch Hu, if it was something beautiful, if it was something great, why would you miss out on it? When I used to teach, people would come, someone would say, "I'm sorry I missed your class." I said, "What are you apologizing for? If I'm giving away free pizza, giving away free ice cream, you come up and apologize to me, 'I'm so sorry I missed, you know, the free pizza you were giving out.' You lost out. I don't look at it as you offended me. I look at it as this is an unbelievable opportunity. What a great chance that we have. So those of you who were in my class will remember the horror files. I have collected horrible stories over the years, usually ones that I've had personal involvement with, some of which I've caused. And I put them all together in what I call my horror files. Someone asked me once, why don't you publish them? And I said, I don't need people killing themselves en masse. They're just terrible stories. So this is from my horror files. I had these two girls from the Beit Yerushalayim over my house for a Shabbos meal. And I said to them, where do you girls usually eat out? They said, we don't. We usually stay in. And I said, why? They said, because it's too painful to eat out it from families. I said, why? I said, because you come in and when they find out that we weren't from, they say, wow, did you ever eat this? Did you ever do that? Did you ever go here? Like they want to live vicariously through us, all of the terrible things that we've turned our backs on. It disgusts us. But why do we feel that way? Where is that coming from? Where is that sense? Rabbi Dr. Avram Tversky, I think that's the right word. Yeah. He said, I only wrote one book, but I wrote it 30 times, you know? So I have many different shiurim, but I guess it really comes down to the same essential yisod. You know, and that's the following. Why aren't people thrilled? What is the lack of happiness and delight? And I think it is essentially part of our chinuch system that we are taught to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not like us. I ask people, do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you? So some people can say yes, because they know they're supposed to. Otherwise, they'll get into trouble. So I say, yes, Hashem loves us. No. I say, do you think Hashem likes you? That's a little harder. I'm going to practice that answer. And then I follow it up. I said, do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu is impressed with you? No. Not impressed? No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will wait for me until the last day to see whether or not I do tshuva. And if not, then he will cast me into the pit of hell out of love so that I will have a tikkun, so that I can go to Olam Haba and float around in some kind of light that I have no idea what that is. And this is mainstream. People say to me, you're exaggerating. I was in a yeshiva, I won't mention where. A prominent yeshiva. And I was having a winter's man. It was... I don't know. I was falling out of things. It was one of those long winter's minds that were like three or four others that year. I don't know how it happened. You know? I think we were doing Yevamos, the Masechta that never ends, you know. And it was just dragging on, and I, you know, got depressed, you know, and developed Ferris Bueller symptoms, you know. I think it's mono. I don't know why it's not showing up in the blood test, you know. You take to bed, you know, and you feel sorry for yourself. And one of my rabbi came by to give me yidud. He saw that I was down. He says, David, come on, you have to get up. I said, Rabbi, what's the point? I'm just going to go to Gehenna anyway. He said, that's true. But he saw that I was down, so he wanted to cheer me up. So he said the following, focus on the following. At 350 degrees, you bake, but at 400, you burn. Boy, did I feel better. That meant that if I davened three times a day and I did everything I was supposed to do and I really learned well, at the end, I would just bake. I once put together, I was speaking in a yeshiva and they brought me in for a series of schmoozing for the boys. That was about 8 years ago. They've never invited me back. But anyway, one of the things I did is I collected all of the schmoozing that paralyze people, that are left over from a different time, you know? So one of them is a Melis B'Torah. This is a famous one, all the Mashkichim give, you know, Sezen B'Chukosai. Why do all of these klolas take place? Because you weren't Amal B'Torah. Not that you didn't learn Torah, you weren't Amal B'Torah. The sweat wasn't pouring down your back, you weren't Amal. That's great, that's just what a kid needs to hear. I don't know, I'm a little tired this morning. Oh, I guess that's why there's a terrorist attack. I think I'll get a cup of coffee. Oh, no wonder there's a plague, you know? Hey, how you doing? I haven't seen you. Oh, famine, you know? Anytime I drop my concentration, bam, destruction comes to the world? Yeah, like a person doesn't have enough hanging over his head. How about the one with the Nitziv? That's a great one, you know? Imagine if the Nitziv hadn't pushed himself so hard and hadn't really worked so hard. He would have just been a regular person, a regular balabas, and he would have gotten up to Shemayim and Hakadosh Baruch Hu would have said to him, "You should have been the Nitziv." And you see people going, "I should be the Nitziv." And there's no way you should be the Nitziv. You have nothing in common with the Nitziv. You'll never be the Nitziv. And your wildest imaginations. I think it was Shiva Brisk of Avim Yeshua. You know, according to one version of the story, he said, I would have been a shoemaker. And Kosh Baruch would say, "Where was all those svarim you're supposed to write?" And Avim Yeshua said, "There'll be certain people who wrote svarim when they get up to Shemayim, they'll say, 'Where are all the shoes you should have made?'" You know? How much pressure is there on us? There was an article of the pressure that kids go through just trying to get into high school. You know, forget about to get into seminary or yeshiva, you know, and it's more and more pressure. You know, there's a famous video, those of you, if you have a Goyish neighbor, they could show it to you on YouTube. I'm trying to stay out of trouble. Anyway, where these people come to a Leib Shteyman, they tell him, we're going to open up a cheder only for the best boys and only the best families, you know, and it was like, I don't know, when I was a kid, we went to cheder with everybody and it all worked out fine. What's wrong with that, you know? And they're trying to explain to him why. Explain to him, he doesn't get it. You understand? These old gedolim, they don't get it, you know? What do they know about, you know, a melech b'tayr, you know? And so it's never enough. It's never enough. We're never satisfied with ourselves. There is a voice inside of everybody's head that says it's not enough. Most of the time, that voice is the Yetzirah. Remove the Satan from in front of us and behind us. I know the Satan in front of me. He's the one tempting me to do bad things. Who's the Satan behind me? He's the one pushing you and pushing you and pushing you. So that you're never satisfied and it's never enough. And you never celebrate the accomplishments that you've made. And let's face it, these are very hard times. It's for a person to have the confidence and the courage to get out of bed. Rav Hutna back in the 60s, they didn't have fancy words back then like self-esteem. But he says, in Europe, you had a problem with gaiva. He says, today you have a problem with self-worth. A person doesn't think he's worth anything. A person doesn't appreciate the nesyonos that I'm going through and the accomplishments that I have. And we convince ourselves that we're helpless and we're victims. I was speaking in a prominent yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and I said, you know, there's a... you see that Yaakov gives up brachas to his sons. Pachas kamayim. You guys are angry guys. Got to get your anger under control. You're losing the kahuna. You lose the bracha. Well, I said, these are brachas. What's wrong with bracha v'hatzlacha? You know, give a bracha. I said, because it's the best of bracha, and it's the one that most of you will never get. Because everyone's too afraid. When I was a kid, if you act like an idiot, your Rebbe told you, stop acting like an idiot. You know what? You stop acting like an idiot. When I was a kid, you know, if you were walking, you broke your leg, the storekeeper came out and yelled at you and said, "Stupid kid, why don't you watch where you're going?" He called your father, and your father said, "Stupid kid, why don't you watch where you're going?" Took you to the hospital. The doctor who's putting on the care said, "Stupid kid, why don't you watch where you're going?" And then you watch where you were going. Now if you fall down, you right away you sue somebody. Because how come the sidewalk was hard? How could I have anticipated that? It's not my fault. And you know this. They gave out an award in honor of the woman who sued McDonald's because she bought a cup of coffee and held it between her legs as she was driving. And when it spilled and burnt her and she crashed, she sued them because it did not say that it was hot. Now take a look at any cup of coffee you buy and written on the cup is, "Caution, contents might be hot." Duh! But we have to warn you because it's not your fault. You're so stupid you can't figure out that a cup of coffee is hot that you hold it between your legs. Idiot! And I say that with respect, but I mean, just, you know. So look at the warning labels on a hairdryer. Do not immerse in water. Oh, yeah, I was going to take a shower. I was going to blow my hair underwater. Thanks for telling me that. There was a costume just sold recently, a Superman costume. It writes, caution does not allow wearer to fly. Got that. One person who won the award was a guy who was driving a Winnebago, and he put it on cruise control, and he went in the back to get a drink, because in his mind, cruise control was like automatic pilot, you know? And of course, it zoomed off the road in a crash, and unfortunately, he survived. And he sued Winnebago, because nowhere does it say you have to continue to drive the car when it's in cruise control. And he won a new Winnebago. And now if you look in the instructions, it says, caution, you must continue to drive vehicle under cruise control. None of these are my favorite. My favorite is Planters Peanuts. Planters Peanuts, their symbol is Mr. Peanut. He's a peanut. He's a top hat, but he's a peanut. He's a peanut. The jar is shaped like a peanut. It says Planters Peanuts. And on the bottom it says, caution, may contain peanuts. You have to put on the warning label. Because everybody says, I can't be held responsible. Nonsense. But I want you to understand how this has seeped into our consciousness. I was a seminary girl. She's on a bed. She said to me, we get these lists of people to daven for. I daven for them. Sometimes they get better. Sometimes they die. It has nothing to do with me. She believes it. You think I daven and anyone's going to get better? Think that's really going to happen? We all know. We blow 100 mega colors in Rosh Hashanah. What's the last tekiah for? To confuse the Satan, because he'll hear that last shofar blast and he'll think it's a shofar Mashiach. Ask Rav Henoch Leibowitz, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chofetz Chaim. 2,000 years, he's falling for the same dumb trick. Tell him to go and buy a machzor. You know what I mean? Look at that. He goes, they do this all the time. Answered Rav Henoch, the Satan's not stupid, we are. Because we don't know how close we are to making that kol the shofar of Mashiach. And luckily for the Satan, every year he's sitting there with pachad, because he knows the madrega that we're on. And we walk out of shul, we forget about it, nobody cares. And he says, made it through another year. Because we could bring the Mashiach. Don't you understand? If the people in this room don't bring Mashiach, who's going to bring Mashiach? This is the top 1% of Jews in the world in this room right now. And we believe that when we daven, we're not going to bring Mashiach. Then who do you think is going to bring Mashiach? You don't understand your kochos. Do you go over to somebody who's looking for a shidduch and give them a bracha? Do you go over to somebody who's having trouble having a child and give them a bracha? Do you go over to somebody who can't make a panosa, somebody who's sick, and give them a bracha? Do you daven that the geula is going to take place in your schus? No, of course not. Because that same voice that tells you you can't figure out that you can't eat peanuts and if it's in a jar that says peanuts tells you that your tefillahs are worth nothing. And the Satan goes, phew. Because the kochos that it takes for a person to be a frum yid today, after 2,000 years of all the suffering and all the difficulties and all the problems in society, and we're still here, and we stand up to be counted as the people of Hashem, and we stand up as the Torah, Jews and their representatives of the Kodesh Baruch Hu in this world, and we think our brachas won't be answered? You hear people with Hashem brachas. As the Chazal say, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, look at the Gemara Megillah that's talking about Goyim. But a Jew, there's no such a thing as a Birchas Hedyet. Every bracha that you give, it's because the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave you the power to give out brachas. You know why we don't do it? I don't believe it makes a difference. That's, by the way, the reason people speak Lashon Hara. Because we really don't believe it makes a difference what we say. I say something good, I say something bad. You know, You think it makes a difference? One of the miracles of NCSY is the fact that you go over and say something so simple to a person and it changes their lives. There was a young lady who was in NCSY. And the girl advisor said to her, "I like your hair." Now that, for girls, obviously means something different than it does for guys, but okay. You know. Today I'm at an age where somebody says, "I'm glad you still have your hair." I spoke once at a family simcha and I said, you know, we Orlovskis, we keep our hair. We have diabetes and heart disease, but at least we have our hair. Yeah? So one of my son-in-laws who's losing his hair, he got up at a family simcha and he says, "What can I say? I'm losing my hair, but I don't have diabetes and heart disease." It's a tough one. Anyway, so he says, "This guy, I like your hair." And they, from that, they built the kesha. And they built the kesha, and the kesha came to glow, and she came over her house for Shabbos. The next thing, today she's a rebbetzin, married to a rav. Came from a family that was anti-religious. What did they do? They said something nice. Do you believe you can go over and say something nice to somebody and change their life? I don't mean their day. I mean their life. I was walking into my building, and a neighbor from a nearby building, he sees me, and he goes, "David?" Obviously, he was Israeli. Americans call me David, but Israelis call me David. "David? When I see your smile, it gives me a reason to live." And I thought, wow, that's a little over the top, you know? I've seen my smile, it never gave me a reason to live. You know? So I tell this to a neighbor, because I thought it was pretty funny. He says, "Oh, I guess you don't know." I said, "What?" Says he tried to kill himself yesterday. He doused himself with gasoline and they got there as he was about to light the match. When he tells you he sees a smiling face and it gives him a reason to live, he means it. This family in Los Angeles is going to get up to Shemayim. And they're going to find out that there are hundreds and hundreds of people who are from today because of them, and their heads will spin, they have no idea why. I'll tell you why. Jonathan Rosenblum heard the story firsthand, he wrote it up. These three Hollywood screenwriters, Jewish guys, were sitting in a cafe near Pico, having a coffee, a brunch on a Saturday morning, and they see a family coming back from shul. The mother and the father and the children, and they're smiling, and they look happy, and they're put together, and they're just talking as they're walking home. And they watch them walking down the street. And one guy says to his two friends, "You know, we'll never have that." And the other ones say, "You know, you're right." And they went off to Eishet Torah, and they started taking classes, and they changed their lives around, they became from, and because they were in media, they started doing other media events to reach out to other people. And this whole family who did nothing but walk down the street with a smile on their face changed Dorei Doros of Klal Yisrael. Think about that next time you're walking home going, and three didn't look at this and say, "I'm becoming a Christian. I'm out of here." It's like, do you realize the impact that you make? Trust me, you don't realize the impact that you make. You know? A guy sees a limousine with a flat tire. This is a true story. It was written up in a book, and in spite of that, it's a true story. Yeah? And he sees there's a flat tire, and the driver's standing outside. So he says, "What's the problem?" He said, "I have a flat tire." He says, "Why don't you change it?" He said, "I don't know how." He says, "You're a limo driver? You don't know how to change a tire?" He says, "I called the AAA." He says, "It'll take him an hour to get here. Come on, I'll teach you how." They find the spare. He cranks it up. He's an Orthodox Jew teaching a guy. You understand, you know? And he changes the tire. When he's all done, the guy lowers the window and he says, "That was so nice of you. I want to, you know, give you something." You know? And he says, No. "I'm an Orthodox Jew. It's called the mitzvah. That's enough for me." He says, "You're an Orthodox Jew. Let me send your wife flowers for Shabbos." "Okay, I'm not going to be meichel for my wife." "Fine. Give him the address." That Shabbos, like a ridiculous bouquet, like a wedding bouquet, you know, the tables, you know, of a fancy affair come. This unbelievable thing, you know. The wife says, "What's this?" "I don't know." Looks at the card. Says, "Thank you so much for your kindness. Donald Trump. P.S. I paid off your mortgage." The next week, Orthodox Jews were looking around for limos. They were actually making flat tires. So there you see it. But you don't always see it. Every time you do a chesed, every time you do something, do you know what it means when Torah Jews are Torah Jews? It's on Route 17. This guy has a flat tire. And so three guys going up to the mountains, they pull over, they say, what's the problem? He got a flat tire. And they change the tire for him, etc. And then, you know, they take a look, he's wearing a yarmulke, and they see he has a cross. So he says, why do you have a cross? I said, I'm Christian. He says, what's with the yarmulke? He says, I don't know. My mother gave this to me when I was a kid and said, if you're ever in trouble, put this on, people will stop and help you. She didn't think the cross would help him. She thought the yarmulke would. Well, my time is almost up, and plus we're running out of time for the shir. I really want to leave enough time for everyone to buy raffle tickets so you can send the kid to Eretz Yisrael. They didn't charge for the shir, which is against everything that I stand for. I once got up to speak someplace, and I said, as unaccustomed as I am to speaking publicly for free, but, you know, obviously the whole thing here this evening is just so that we can help people. That's why we're here. We're here to be inspired. We're the people who are going to save the world. We're the people who are going to heal the sick and get children with the childless and shidduchim for those who are single. We are the people who are going to heal the sick. We're the people who are going to bring Mashiach. We're the people who are going to change the entire world. All you have to know is believe that you're the person who's going to do it. All you have to know is believe that you have the koyach, that your tefillos are being heard, that you have the ability to make a difference in this world. My friends, not to believe in ourselves is a luxury we don't have anymore. And if we're going to change the face of the world, the face of Klal Yisrael, we're going to do it because we stand up and take responsibility. I don't know who else is going to do it if not us. You know, I once gave a shir, and at the end of it, there was a bunch of mothers who were upset about something, some issue I had raised. And they were saying, why doesn't anybody do anything? Why doesn't anybody do anything? And I said, I am. If I have to save the world by myself, I will. If you want to help me, I can always use some help. But if not, we're going to save the world. There's no such a thing as I can't do it. I live in Eretz Yisrael. We're going through a rough time for a change. Stabbings and shootings. And there's been an amazing small amount of casualties. You know why? Because the people in this room think about us Jews in Eretz Yisrael when you say your Tehillim. You think about us when you're daven. And every tefillah stops an attack, blunts a knife, stops a bullet. These things don't happen by chance. These things happen because the good people in this room care. And now we have to think bigger. We have to think about Klal Yisrael. We have to think about the world. We have to change the matzav. And you have the koyach to do it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the koyach to allow us to save Klal Yisrael, save the world, bring Mashiach, make the world the way it's supposed to be, because you have the power to do it. Yivach.